Here comes the blitz. Nicole McLean. Alex Smith under heat. He's steamrolled at the 40-yard line. And Alex Smith is hurt. He's hurt bad, man. Look at him. He's in a lot of pain.
On November 18, 2018, Washington Redskins quarterback Alex Smith suffered one of the most gruesome injuries in football history, ending not only his season, but seemingly his career as well. In the 18 months since, Smith has remained largely silent in public, leading to rumors and speculation about his true condition. Now, he reveals all. His ordeal is documented in a one-hour E60 special, Project 11, which airs tonight. And for the first time, he describes the terrifying reality of an injury that could potentially have cost him not only his leg, but also his life. Today, we're joined by both Stefania Bell, the reporter who followed Smith's recovery every step of the way, and also by Smith himself, who explains why he chose to document his excruciating ordeal and tells us what's next. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, May 1st. This is ESPN Daily.
Yep, we are recording.
So I'll just jump right in. Alex, in the 18 months since your injury, you've been pretty quiet about everything you've gone through, but this is an all-access look at your life and everything that happened. Why did you decide to tell your story this way?
God, great question. I think this, to go back to the beginning when it started, when I was in the hospital and things had settled down, from a health perspective and obviously a lot of the scary stuff. And I'd gotten through some of that. Our team doctor at that point had kind of alerted my wife and I to the fact that this was a pretty unique circumstances, not just for a football player, but for any athlete. And that if I had any interest in recording it, she thought it would potentially be a good idea and a good story, just in the sense that it was kind of unprecedented. Once we had contacted and been in contact with ESPN, specifically E60 and Stefania, and were really comfortable with the way they were going to handle it and tell the story, I thought it was just an opportunity I couldn't pass up. It's not necessarily my style, to be out there in the limelight and doing something like this. But I realized through my medical experiences, I benefited through so many people before me that science and medicine had kind of built off of. I felt like I owed it to everybody to provide that next step potentially and document this and see what comes of it.
Well, let's go to 2018. So you guys were 6-3 heading into that game against Houston. Uh-huh. How did you feel like the season was going?
I mean, the crazy part thinking back is I feel like we, 6-3 and leading the division by whatever we were, a game or two, I felt like we were in the driver's seat and a ton ahead of us because we really hadn't played nearly as well as I know we all knew we could play.
In that particular game, what was your mindset like that morning going into it?
Oh, a day like any other.
Alex Smith, 14-year veteran, has this team in first place in their division.
Yeah, Redskins back in business, down by 10 here. First possession of the second half.
Third down and 9. I can remember the play well. I made a protection adjustment at the line of scrimmage, and at the snap, felt the free rusher.
Here comes the blitz. Nicole McLean, Alex Smith under heat. He's steamrolled at the 40-yard line.
At that point, I was just securing the football. I wasn't necessarily trying to break a tackle or make a play, just kind of trying to go down and secure the football. And at that point, felt my leg go fuzzy.
And Alex Smith is hurt. He's hurt bad, man. Look at him. He's in a lot of pain.
And then obviously pretty weird to kind of roll over and look down at your leg and it's obviously pretty disfigured. Immediately, several players around me calling for trainers and doctors and them coming out and, air casting the thing and getting out of there and obviously getting on the cart. And obviously moments later, the pain sets in, in kind of the reality of the situation.
After it had happened, the cart comes out. What's going through your head as you're headed to the locker room?
I immediately knew my leg was broken. And, in my head, it was kind of, I'm going to have surgery and they're going to put me back together or whatever I have to do, pins and screws and plates or whatever. I remember thinking very much that obviously my season was done. I never anticipated that it would be the process that it's turned into.
When you got to the locker room, what did your doctors tell you at first?
Yeah, when we first, I still had the air cast on, which got put immediately on the field there. And then we went to the x-ray room to get x-rays. Dr. West, our team doctor, came in and she opened up the air cast while I was still on the x-ray machine after I'd taken several x-rays. And at that point, there was blood, a small amount of blood in the air cast. And that's when we realized that it was a compound break. I had a small puncture on the backside of my calf. And at that point, immediately went to the, got in the ambulance and rolled for emergency surgery.
And what happened when you got to the hospital?
Got to the hospital and then went down for emergency surgery. Next thing I know is I woke up the next morning with great news of the surgery, how good it went and how good it looked lined up. And I'd had a bunch of plates put in and that it was well aligned and that surgery went well.
So you're in the hospital, you've had the surgery, it's successful. What's the last thing you remember clearly?
I remember being in a decent amount of pain and running kind of a mild fever. Obviously, you're on decent amount of meds. I'm on antibiotics. I'm on, you know, some pain meds, obviously being out of surgery. But at that point, I'm wrapped up and in this kind of, I've got a little like bandaged boot around my leg and I'm already up on crutches. You know, you're kind of moving around, getting ready to get discharged. And this is a couple of days after my surgery. Now, the night I'm supposed to get discharged and I'm still kind of running a mild little fever. And it was the day before Thanksgiving. So I wanted to be home for that. And luckily our team doctor, Dr. West, talked us into just, you know, she was really kind of said, well, I don't see the rush in discharging tonight. Why don't you guys just stay one more night and go home in the morning? And so we decided to stay, thankfully. And then that night, I went into septic shock. Really is kind of the last thing I remember. Obviously, a bunch of doctors and nurses in and out and a little more panic setting in. And then the surgeon had come in and at that point he looked at my leg and unwrapped it. And obviously, pretty significant black spot on my shin, strong sign of infection. And at that point, that's the last thing I remember. And then obviously went down for several surgeries over the next 10 days.
We'll return to Alex later in the episode. But first, ESPN's Stefania Bell fills us in on what made his injury so dangerous and the lengths that doctors went to save both his leg and his life. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Hi, Stefania.
Hi, Mina.
Stefania, I was hoping you could start by explaining what you cover at ESPN, because it is very unique.
I essentially cover medical content. That's the simplest way of explaining it. I'm a physical therapist by background, and I practiced for nearly 20 years before I switched over to the media side.
So November 18, 2018, Washington is playing the Houston Texans at home. What happened on the exact play where Alex Smith was injured?
Well, he was trying to protect the ball as he saw J.J. Watt coming towards him. And you see him go down, and it's relatively unremarkable. You know, quarterback takes the ball and takes a sack. And then you see him reach for his leg. It really took a few times watching it to see how severe it was, that his leg bent in the wrong place. So I knew it was serious. You know, he was carted off, and there really wasn't much more that we learned other than a few weeks later, it was revealed that he had a compound fracture, which meant that the bone had pierced the skin. And then we didn't hear much. There were rumors of an infection, but I didn't know anything specific. We knew that he had had surgery to address the fracture, and that was about all the information that was released at the time. Dr. Robin West, who's the head team physician in Washington, has also been a friend and colleague of mine on the medical side for a number of years. In January, when Alex had turned a corner and had begun to reflect on the importance of wanting to document his story, he spoke with Dr. West about it, and she said, "You know, Alex is thinking about telling his story, and I think he might be interested in talking to you."
So you've been following Alex's recovery for more than a year now, during a time when most of the world knew nothing about his condition. What exactly was the original injury that he suffered?
He suffered a compound fracture of his tibia, meaning that the shin bone, the large bone in the lower leg, broke. And compound means that the bone punctures the skin. And people may recall the Joe Theismann injury where he had his shin bone break. But in Alex's case, that bone came through the skin, and it was something they didn't realize it was compound until he was off the field and they could lift up his pants there at the calf area and see a blood on his sock, which was the clue that it was an open wound.
So Alex was rushed from the locker room to the hospital. Why was it necessary to get him into surgery immediately?
It's the open wound. Once you have that, you introduce the risk for infection. And again, keep in mind, this was a wet field. You've got dirt, you've got grass, you've got water, dirty uniforms, other players, and everything that's floating around in that milieu. The minute the skin is broken, you have an open access point, if you will, for any bacteria from any of those sources. So not only was the fracture something that needed to be repaired in terms of getting the bones lined properly, the wound also needed to be flushed out and irrigated to try and remove the potential for an infection.
So how did the procedure go once he got there?
When they saw the more detailed imaging of the CAT scan at the hospital, they recognized that the fracture was a really bad fracture. And essentially the crack went from the ankle joint and spiraled up to almost his knee. So when they went in for surgery, they had to realign everything and then plate his leg to keep it in position and then add pins and screws. But they were very happy with the result. You know, at the end, it was long surgery. It was difficult, but everything looked beautiful and everything was in alignment.
So, Stefania, as you mentioned, a compound fracture, it's not common, and this was pretty gruesome, but it is a normal football injury. And he has the procedure, and things go well, and he's at the hospital. Everything seems fine. When does it not seem fine? When do things take a turn for the worse?
It was really, they started to get concerned on the second day. One of the things you always monitor in the hospital is the presence of a fever. It's normal after an injury and a surgery like this to maybe run a mild fever. But Alex's fever on that second day was a little high and continued to go up by the third day. And so it was in that window that they were getting nervous about why was the fever spiking and began running tests to try and determine what the cause of that fever was. Eventually, the cultures come back and confirm that he has an infection. And now he's developed sepsis, which is where the body is working vigorously to fight off infection. And that condition can become life-threatening.
Alex said that he almost convinced the doctors to let him go home that night. What would have happened if he had been discharged?
He could have died. I mean, it's that simple. Their fear in retrospect is that had he gone home, it's possible that the infection could have become so significant that he would have died in his sleep. And that's really something that takes your breath away, because it was just the intuition on the part of Dr. West, his team physician who knew him the best, and her years of experience, that she said, you know, let's just keep you one more day. Let's get that fever down. Let's keep an eye on you. And ultimately, that decision saved his life.
So at this point, Alex is knocked out. He has no idea what's going on. What are the doctors doing to fight this?
You know, they had taken the bandages off and looked at the wound initially when Alex was spiking this fever. And the wound looked like a normal post-compound fracture surgical wound, a little beat up, as they would describe it, but not out of the ordinary. And the next day, when the infection was clearly persisting and his symptoms weren't changing, they unwrapped the leg again, and now they saw a leg that was black. And black means necrosis, means dead tissue. They knew that they had to go to surgery right away to open that area up and try and flush out the bacteria. So they went in for what's called a debridement. That debridement involved removing any tissue that had been killed by the bacteria. And so they went in once, and everyone in his family thought, okay, they went in, they got it, it's gone. And they had to inform them, no, it's not the way this works. We have to go in every day until we're sure that it's 100% gone. All in total, there were 8 debridements.
What was the state of his leg after the debridement process?
It didn't look much like a leg at all. Quite frankly, as somebody who had to take anatomy classes in graduate school as part of my physical therapy training, my immediate thought when I saw the pictures of Alex's leg was, this looks like a partially dissected cadaver limb that we would have in anatomy class. The infection had taken a substantial portion of his leg away.
There's a moment in the E60 episode where Alex's wife, Elizabeth, and his doctor, Dr. West, are talking about a conversation they had at this point about how to proceed. What happened?
Elizabeth had asked Dr. West for a private moment because she was feeling a bit overwhelmed by all that was happening, how quickly this had changed. So she asked to meet with her in this small cafeteria where they'd had conversations before. And her question was one that I think a lot of us would ask in that situation. If you saw a loved one sitting there, potentially their life being threatened by a bacteria that's moving up a limb. And her question was, can we just cut it off? If this bacteria is here and you cut it off from the rest of the body, is that what we need to do to save his life?
Coming up, we turn back to Alex Smith, who tells us what it was like to wake up after those 10 days and face one of the most difficult choices imaginable. Redbox has top entertainment when you need it most, streaming instantly on your smart TV or favorite device. With Redbox On Demand, stream a family movie in the living room, a romantic comedy in the bedroom, or the ultimate action flick in your home theater. With the newest hit movies, along with thousands of your favorite classics, you'll always find something to watch for any mood or occasion. Connection is everything, now more than ever. Let Redbox bring you together. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch.
Stefania just took us through the hours and days after the injury. Alex, when did you come to, and what are your first clear memories?
Yeah, I mean, I remember kind of coming to in my bed in the room. Not really, you know, everything was kind of, not to say a blur, that would be an understatement, really, really dreamlike, little vague memories here and there of going in and out of surgeries and don't remember much at all. And at that point, having essentially a meeting with all the doctors and my wife, and I believe my father might have been in the room as well, about my options, explaining to me what had happened, you know, the bacteria that had showed up in my leg. And at that point, did I want to try to undergo more surgeries to save my leg? Or I could elect to have my leg amputated, and it would be at the knee because of how high my break went. You know, and I remember discussing the reality of both options. I elected to go with the limb salvage surgeries, and it was going to be a long road to recovery and a lot of surgeries. But it was something that I wanted to pursue to keep my leg, and the surgeon was very confident that he could get it done. And so, I'm fortunate that I was in great hands and, had been in great hands, and that, I'm here today.
Was that a difficult decision given some of the risks involved?
Yeah. I mean, I remember very much at the time. I mean, I feel like I have such a good understanding of it and the risks now, but at the time it seemed like a foreign language, what they were telling me. And I'm, you know, wait, what? You're going to take a muscle from here and put it there. And that might not work. And if that fails, we can do this one. And, you know, and they're taking it from my good leg, my left leg, and putting it down on my lower right leg so my bone can heal. And there's potential that fails. And then they were going to, you know, potentially take my lat, and move it down there. And there's potential that fails as well. And obviously in the end, you end up potentially amputating anyway. And you know, they kind of have to tell you all the worst case scenarios of what could happen.
It's kind of crazy because you're talking about these things so calmly, right? Like, yeah, and then my lad and my dad, and like, we're talking about some really terrifying things. And I know, yeah, it's been a long time, and you're, yeah, able to kind of, you know, look back on it with like a circumspect yeah, attitude, but I can only imagine how terrifying it was to process all of these decisions at the time.
Yeah. It's crazy how, you know, obviously I'm close to 18 months removed now, and this is my normal, you know, now I don't, I no longer wake up in the morning surprised, when I look down at my leg, but certainly it took several months for that every morning I'd wake up and look down at my leg and be re-surprised, you know. You know, you sleep thinking you're totally healthy and wake up and you're, you know, obviously that reality hits you again of what had happened and that it will never be the same.
Ultimately, why did you make the choice you did?
I think the potential upside in it, you know, having started to learn some of the outcomes, I think, like I said, the confidence in the surgeons, that they could do it and that I was a candidate for it, to get it done. And I think obviously having discussed it with my wife and, you know, both outcomes that I wanted to try to give this a try, before I decided to amputate, you know, and I'm really thankful that I did.
How many procedures did you ultimately end up needing to save your leg?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard multiple counts. I think I'm at 19. I think it's the latest.
You don't know.
I've honestly heard multiple. It's 18 or 19.
Jeez.
And I still have one ahead of me, at this point down the line. But yeah, I believe it's 19.
Amidst all of this, as you were rehabbing and going through all these surgeries, you know, there was a lot of public curiosity about what was happening to you. Why did you decide to keep it private?
I mean, I think that it has to really go back to the start in the sense that when a lot of this was happening, I was really unconscious in the hospital, when a lot of this began. And I think it's really a credit to my wife that, and our doctors that I don't think she wanted me to wake up in the hospital and the whole world knew what had happened to me before I knew. And that she wanted me to be able to kind of tell it on my terms. I didn't want to, this to be a, you know, a social media thing and breaking news thing that a month to month that I really want to kind of wait and see where this went, where the story ended, before I put it all out there.
Alex, the film opens with a trip you made to the San Antonio Military Medical Center. Why was that one of the places you went for treatment?
Yeah, like I said, I was fortunate that, immediately our doctor, going back to Dr. West, had a relationship with some people down there, and this is the military's center for all limb injuries and really some of the most, you know, experts in the world at leg injuries, limb salvage, at the rehab process. I mean, I remember laying in the hospital and seeing videos of servicemen and women wearing external fixators, going through the rehab process. And then obviously to get the opportunity to go down there and visit, as well as go down there and rehab and spend time. I was really fortunate that they allowed me the opportunity to go down there and join them.
One of the points that comes up a lot in the E60 is your injury was much more like a war injury or combat injury than a football injury. What was it like for you to speak with military members recovering from their own injuries?
Humbling. You know, you certainly don't feel like you're worthy to be down there alongside them. These are men and women that have given and sacrificed so much for such a great cause. And certainly I'm down there because I was playing a game that I get paid a lot of money and have a ton of fun doing. You know, unfortunately, I got a crazy infection and ended up in a similar situation as a lot of them. But certainly you don't feel worthy to be alongside them, and what they've given up and the sacrifice that they've made.
What was the first major milestone in your rehab?
Oh man. Certainly walking again, when I had the fixator, when I had my external fixator on, and then getting the green light to slowly start to weight bear. So then I did partial weight bearing for several weeks. And I remember when I took my first step, you know, without a crutch, and what that was like. I mean, from, you know, the first time you start to jog, to run, to jump. I mean, I think the first time I fell down and realized that I wasn't going to break.
When was that first step and how did you feel?
The first step when I had the fixator on, God, it was mid-March, I believe. Yeah, I remember that I was in her yard and with my wife out there and holding onto the crutch for balance. I was holding it like a bat, like someone walking a tightrope would do. And you know, yeah, taking the tiniest little steps, and you're so scared to put weight on it. But obviously, an amazing feeling after you've taken a few and you realize that it is sturdy, and can support you.
So when we last see you in the dock, you are not too far removed from taking your first steps. How are you doing now?
I'm doing really well. I mean, it's funny. I feel like I've said this so many times over the course of the 18 months, but I feel like I kind of continue to surprise myself. I have not hit a wall. I continue to progress. There's things I'm doing now that I wasn't doing a month ago that I certainly wasn't doing 4 months ago. And so, it's that gives me hope that I kind of continue to get stronger, continue to heal, get better, and trying to chase it and get back. I mean, literally, I feel like I'm as fast and as strong and healthy and pain-free as I've ever been. With that said, I still have obviously a ways to go and, you know, still encouraged to chase it down.
And when you say it, chasing it, you mean returning to football?
Yeah, to play football again, play quarterback again.
When you were in the middle of, you know, having multiple surgeries that you do not know the number of at this point, not even sure if you would keep your leg, did you ever think that would even be a possibility?
No, I mean, I was scared it wasn't. I guess I felt like I knew it was the hard decision to try to put that out there and to chase it. I feel like, you know, I was confronted with this, and I still am confronted with this great challenge, you know, and it's a great opportunity. And certainly, I could elect not to do it and walk away from football and you know, go play golf and enjoy my kids the rest of my life. But I just feel like, even though that's the easy decision and the hard thing was trying to chase this, I don't feel like walking away was the right decision. I wanted to see how far I could take this. I know that if I can go and play quarterback again, there's nothing I won't be able to do in life.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Antel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Russell DiNallo and Troy Farkas. I'll talk to you Monday.